Welcome to the Experience Points Podcast, episode 27, for May 27th, 2009. Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm Scott Chester.
And I'm George Abor.
And we are the co-creators of a blog called experiencepoints.blogspot.com. And it's a website we created and dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and the culture surrounding them. And today, we have our old friend, LB Jeffries.
LB Jeffries.
I call him my old friend. I've talked to him on Twitter a couple times. Yeah. That counts as an old friend,
he's
right?
He's a good guy and a writer that I'd really look up to.
So. Mm-hmm. Quite a prolific writer on video games, and this week we chose an article from Pop Matters, and it was about traveling in games, which is a really broad topic that surprisingly we haven't talked about that much before, and people always comment on going from place to place in games as far as, you know, like a quick bullet point review type thing, but nothing too much in depth. So this was just an interesting article to read. He had a few different examples of various games that approach travel, and also philosophically, what does traveling mean in games and what is the purpose of it?
Yeah.
So where do you want to start off with it? Do you want to go with a couple things that he mentioned?
Sure.
First of all, one of the first things he talks about is whether traveling is meant to alleviate boredom or simulate boredom, essentially. I mean, it's not specifically what he says, but what was happening in this article is trying to figure out what is the purpose of traveling. Is it meant to always be an active part of the game, like you have to be doing something at all times, or is it meant to be downtime in between events?
Right.
And so, I mean, if you have something like, let's say, the example was a flight simulator, having a long stretch of traveling and nothing happen is crucial to the experience of simulating flight.
Right.
Like, you're not going to be doing barrel rolls in a 747. You're just going to be flying for long stretches of time.
Yeah, which is boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it could be. That's the thing. This whole thing, and he hits on this a couple of different times in the article, the idea that travel is linked with boredom, I find. I don't know. It didn't resonate with me all that much. Like, I don't think I'm that bored by travel in video games.
Okay, but what about travel in real life? I mean, if you're on a 6-hour car journey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I don't... The fact that I'm playing a video game means I'm already not bored. Because I'm...
It presumes you're not bored.
Exactly, because I'm willingly playing this video game.
Huh.
I don't think I can actually willingly make myself bored very easily.
Okay.
Like, here's the thing. Like, if I was actually physically traveling for 6 hours in a car, sure, I might get bored. But it depends on why I was doing that thing.
Right.
It presupposes that I don't want to be doing it.
Right.
But if I'm going into a game like Far Cry 2 or something, where I know I'm going to be doing a lot of traveling, I don't really have a problem with driving for minutes on end that much, because that's the deal. I knew this going into it, that this would be the deal.
You've signed an agreement.
I signed an agreement with Clint Hawking.
Yeah, I think I could get bored. I do get bored.
Did you get bored in Far Cry 2?
Far Cry 2 paints a very pretty place.
Uh-huh.
I think it's visually appealing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, after a while, it's not boring.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there was boredom, absolutely. And
okay.
The boredom came not so much from the traveling in and of itself, but traveling and then taking a action that is a boring action as well, that's something that's not that exhilarating, and then traveling again.
Like, what kind of boring action?
So,
like,
an example is doing one of the missions in Far Cry 2 for the gun dealer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mission that is always just blowing up a convoy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was very familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are stretches where I go get the mission, then I go to a safe house to save, then I go get guns, then I go to another safe house to save, then I go to the convoy, blow up the convoy, go back to the gun place to get more guns and buy more weapons, go back to a safe house to save, and after a while, it's been quite a long time, and it's the same place, and yeah, it's boring. When I'm in that car for that final stretch, it can be pretty grating.
But see, that's the distinction that I'm trying to make. Like, if you didn't have to do... Is it really the traveling that's making it grating, or is it the repetition? Because what if you didn't have to do any traveling and the convoy was right outside the door to the weapon shop every time? You blew it up, went back in the door, got a new mission, stepped out the door, blew it up.
Okay.
Would that be...
You're right. That's a good point. In that case, I would rephrase it and say, Yeah, that repetition is what is boring. Uh-huh. But traveling is becomes easily repetitive.
Yeah, that's true.
And especially in something like Far Cry 2, where I have to travel consistently throughout the map using cars and sometimes the bus, the public transportation.
Mm. Well, then how about another point that is brought up in the article? I mean, do games always have to not be boring? Are games held to the standard that you can never have a dull moment? I mean, and I would argue that if we're going to look for games as maturing, it's kind of strange to expect them to be giddily exciting at all times.
Yes. I'm going to venture to say that, it's a really hard question.
Yeah.
It's a surprisingly hard question.
Yeah.
Because particularly for something like a simulation,
yeah,
there should be times of boredom.
Yeah.
But I think that boredom is a word that is too often used to just describe when you're not doing something actively. It's not a high tense situation.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of game exploration,
mm-hmm.
right? And so exploring the wastelands in Fallout 3, for example, I enjoyed. I didn't find that boring.
Yeah.
What I did find boring in that game was my exploration being slowed down by repetitive combat, which mm-hmm. is kind of what we talked about just now.
And that's the thing about Far Cry 2 that bugs me.
Right.
Yeah.
But in the Fallout universe, there's a sense that I've never seen this landscape before. Mm. So exploration is key, right? Uh-huh. In Far Cry 2, I have a map. I know where everything's at. The only exploration is finding the diamond briefcases.
Mm-hmm.
Cases.
Yeah.
But the exploration itself is fun, in which case I wouldn't consider it to be boring.
Yeah.
Another example, I think, are games where travel is also a calculation.
Uh-huh.
And I think that you could call real-time strategy games in some situations a game that includes traveling that is not boring,
mm-hmm.
because you are doing this traveling, or at least making decisions about travel very consciously.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're deciding, you know, where a certain troop moves to,
yeah.
you know that they may encounter other troops along the way.
Yeah.
You know that your scout may be able to bump into enemy strongholds along their route.
Uh-huh.
And so the route that you choose for your people to take mm-hmm. is in and of itself an action in the game, and is important because you don't want them to be ambushed.
Yeah.
You don't want them to, you know, get flanked.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, in various real-time strategy games, there are technical choices that go into how you travel.
And so it's a way of implementing travel that isn't just about exploration. I mean, it seems like exploration in that example that you just gave is secondary to just straight out tactics.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, you're exploring the map, but not in the way of just taking it all in. You're exploring it in order to exploit it, like in order to exploit advantages against someone else.
I'm big on exploitation. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, it's just something that with a game, like how about like going on to another example, how about like Prince of Persia, which seems very much more exploration of the map in order to just learn about the world. And then you have to travel from area to area in the this. I guess we should say that we're talking about the new Prince of Persia here. Yeah. The older Prince of Persia is another case example. But the new Prince of Persia, you have to do a lot of traveling throughout the world and sometimes backtracking too, even if you're not really trying to collect the seeds, because to get to one place or another, you'll need to cut through various areas.
Yeah, I would call that traveling. And I really like the modern Prince of Persia, the way that they do traveling in that game, because even though you have to backtrack, it's still a system of nodes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you move from node to node, and each node is where you're doing the real action of the game.
Mm-hmm.
However, because there's not a lot of death, right? You can't die in the game.
Exactly.
However, there's still small challenges. It's kind of a combination of both exploration and challenges.
Yeah.
And there are a few examples in the game where you could get to point A to point B a different route,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that in and of itself, I think, is a non-stressful situation that doesn't get boring.
Mm.
It does allow you time to relax. You're not under pressure. You're not about to fight a boss.
Mm-hmm.
It's calm.
I think this is a pretty divisive game. But I think the Wind Waker kind of taps into a similar feeling of what you just described with Prince of Persia, because there are times when you're traversing the world in Prince of Persia and when you're sailing across the world in Wind Waker where things get dull. I mean, there's not a lot of action happening, but I think that's not necessarily a bad thing, and boredom shouldn't be. And if people are bored by that, it's not a bad thing because it's used to juxtapose when action happens. You know, because it's used to create this world where there are some serene parts of it and some chaotic parts of it. And so I was never really that down on the Wind Waker making you sail all around the world for minutes on end, because I looked at it as kind of a more meditative zone. And then once you got to an island, it became action again. Right. You know, and in that case, using traveling to either like simulate the monotony of moving from place to place, or just to simulate the reflection that happens when you can't take any other action and you're just waiting on something,
yeah,
I think is a good thing. I mean, I don't think you need to make everything action-packed or even tactical, because you're just, it's tying into the theme of a game rather than the actual action of it.
Sure, but then there's got to be a time limit, right? I mean, at some point you go, wow, I've been traveling on the sea for 20 minutes, and I get the point.
That's why people didn't like Wind Waker that much.
So I haven't played Wind Waker, but I have played The Phantom Hourglass on the DS.
Yeah.
And their travel on sea was punctuated with challenges, like you had to jump over a barrier or fire at certain barriers.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was also a similar Far Cry 2 system where you picked a point on the map that could then travel you to another point on the map. Did Wind Waker have both of those?
Basically, Far Cry 2 is the Wind Waker in Africa. it's really funny to think about this way, because I wasn't thinking about it while I was playing Far Cry 2, but it's very similar. I mean, the map would be divided up into grids, and you would sail across it, and sometimes there'd be enemies in certain grids, and sometimes there'd be islands and other side quests to do. It would break up the monotony in that way, but just like Far Cry 2... Well, to a lesser extent, really. Wind Waker did it better. But if you really wanted to avoid enemies, you could by taking a very roundabout way to your goal. But if you want to cut through something really fast, like, you know, in Far Cry, like the village or something like that, you're more likely to be attacked.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think there's room for whichever way you want to play it. I just don't think it necessarily needs to be limited to all action or all monotony at the same time. Like, there are choices to be made.
Right. And that's kind of what the Wind Waker does,
or
Phantom Hourglass, with that punctuated acts of action.
Mm.
But if they didn't have that, do you think you'd be saying the same thing? If it really was just moving from point A to point B with no enemies, no threat of obstacles to jump over or anything, that you would just be fine sailing your way from island to island?
Because
at some point you just presume, right? Like Fallout 3, for example. That's a game where you, in order to move from point A to point B, you have to explore the space first.
Yeah.
But once you reach a node,
a
quest node, you could then warp to each place.
I don't know, that example just seems like eat your vegetables and then you can have your dessert type thing. Like, if you do this long, monotonous walk, then you'll be rewarded by not having to do it. And I feel like that's just plain punishment. Like, it's a weird way to design a game, because you're implicitly acknowledging that your travel is just there to piss off the gamer.
Right.
Because why would you let quick warps happen if the traveling wasn't a crucial or fun part?
Okay, I'm not going to say that this is why they do it, but there's a theoretical response to that,
And
that is to say they want to encourage exploration, but they don't want to encourage exploration of the same place. They don't want you to backtrack, is what I'm saying. Because backtracking is a classic complaint from gamers about a game. People hate backtracking.
Yeah.
You've already been there, you've already found all of the treasure chests, you've bumped into the weird places and the weird quest givers, and so Fallout 3 was saying, well, we can get you from point A to point B, with exploration, but then you don't have to do it again. And that saves a lot. I mean, the world is huge. Traveling from one point to the other, and trust me, I did it, is really hard.
But wouldn't it be better to integrate that into the gameplay somehow? Like, I mean, I'm not saying this is what they should have done, but, you know, give you an airship, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, like, shouldn't you keep it in-game rather than having to do a loading screen?
I mean, that's feasible. And Jeffries mentions... Yeah. RPGs, like Japanese RPGs, which do a very similar thing, where they force you to explore the world.
Yeah.
However, that exploration results in random acts of violence.
Random acts of slime-inspired violence.
Violence.
Rats, maybe.
You've got to fight oozes and dinosaurs and stuff. But then eventually, you know, you work your way up. A lot of
RPGs. And then you get that airship that will allow you to backtrack quickly. But it just doesn't let you jump around.
I mean, and it's the same thing as Fallout, except for now it's warped travel, so they don't... Maybe they're not investing the time to think of some clever plot device.
Mm.
But then again, you know, maybe they're just saying...
Maybe warped travel is the clever plot device.
Yeah, I mean, and they mentioned, if you can tell based upon how long they presume it's going to take you to travel there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the time will change.
Ah.
So if you move from point A to point B that's on the far side of the other map, it'll go from daytime to nighttime.
Wait, if you're warping?
Even if you're warping, because it's presuming you walked. It's essentially, it's just skipping what you were going to do already.
Okay, never mind. It's not a clever plot thing then. It's just, it's not even a warp in-game.
It's not. I mean, you're traveling. They're just presuming that,
that you're doing it. But I mean, it's just, I don't know. I just feel like that's kind of a shortcut, because if you were doing that, wouldn't you be getting attacked by people? Wouldn't you be noticing things off the side of the road that would pique your interest? Like,
well, they presume that you've already dealt with it on the way there. Like, you've already seen
But I mean, like, don't enemies, like, respawn?
Well,
like,
yeah, the enemies will fight you again, sure.
That's the thing that kind of bugs me about, like, auto-warping that isn't integrated into the narrative or the gameplay.
Because you're saying you should be fought. You should have to suffer through that again.
Here's the way...
Have the option of clearing the landscape of enemies.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I would... That's
either no respawn or no fast travel.
Here's the way that I approach games. Like... And it's kind of weird because I don't think this comes off very often in our writing or the podcast, but I approach games in a very like nearly mathematical way.
Yeah, in our conversations, I've gleaned this.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to finish this quest, I look at it as an equation. You have to get this amount of gear and do these amount of things. And you know what part of that equation is? Traveling. Like, that is part of the equation. Like, you can't just remove that from the equation or else it won't balance.
See, and for me, I hate math.
Yeah. So. I mean, I just think that if part of the game is traveling to get to a place and then you take that travel out of it, are you not just removing a segment of your gameplay and saying, oh, this isn't as important?
Yeah, but I'm okay with that. Like, here's the thing. At some point, in order to fit into a narrative sense, you have to put in certain things. So, for example, in Far Cry, in order to move from quest node to quest node, or World of Warcraft, in order to move from quest node to quest node, you must travel.
Yeah.
Right? Here are the two options. One is have no large space. Lose the sense of expansion.
The grandeur.
Making node to node incredibly easy to travel to.
Yeah.
Or maintain that sense of vast space and still allow you to move from point A to point B. Because at some point you have to admit, moving from, Shatrath to another major city is kind of boring if you're way higher level.
If you've done
it
a million times.
Right? There's no threat along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So why force your players to do it? And in something like World of Warcraft, there is no point in doing it. There are some points where I have to travel backwards to cities that I shouldn't be going to. I'm only going there for maybe, leveling up a profession.
Yeah.
So of course they saved me that time.
Yeah.
And I think World of Warcraft does a good way because they have you on a griffin and allow you to kind of look at the visual appeal. And then there are options. People can download Bejeweled add-ons, and play little mini games while they're traveling.
I like that, though, because they're integrating it into the gameplay and they're simulating what traveling is actually like. You could be gearing yourself up for the battle that you're going into, or you could just be doing your daily commute and you want to bust out Bejeweled. I mean, I'd rather just do that than have, a quick load screen, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and again... One of the worst things about the load screens is that you lose that sense of space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even something like Fable 2
mm-hmm.
that does an interesting, breadcrumb trail that leads you to where your travels go. Because there are so many gaps between the cities and the places that you need to be, you lose a complete sense of location.
Uh-huh.
After playing Fable 2, if someone asked me to draw a map of the Fable 2 world, there's no way I could do it.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Because you would travel off of the main path or something like that.
Right.
Just, get distracted by a side quest or...
And I think even the Golden Trail was detrimental. They helped you travel in terms of knowing where to travel by getting rid of the need to use your own landmarks.
Mm.
So when I'm traveling in...
Well, it seems like that would be okay for lots of people. I mean, if you don't want to bust out graph paper and start making a map of it, it seems
maybe.
Yeah.
But it's a win-lose situation, right? For example... Japanese RPGs, maybe like Final Fantasy XII, when you're in a large major city, it's fairly easy to get lost in terms of where certain locations are.
Yeah.
You could open your map and say, oh yeah, this is where the blacksmith is. This is where, the flight master is or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, by maintaining, persistence in this major city, you eventually get accustomed to where things are. And it's almost as if you learned what that city is like.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a breadcrumb trail like Fable 2 does, you lose that because you don't need to have reference points anymore. You just get to walk there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is tapping into one of the last points in the article, which is, is travel completely linked to open world style and adventure style games? And B, is travel defined as inaction? So, I mean, here's a real theoretical example. Can you say that in Super Mario Brothers you're traveling? I'm talking about Super Mario Brothers 1. Can you say that you're traveling in that game?
Yeah.
Because on a very micro level, you're walking and jumping and going from place to place, But also on a macro level, there's a larger scope. I mean, you're going from world to world and castle to castle and so forth. Would that be considered traveling in the way that we're talking about it here? Or is that something else completely?
I mean, the way I would define it, I would say that traveling, in my case then, because you're pushing the subject, is by definition a downtime between either actions or quest nodes or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Because in Mario, you're always making decisions,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether or not to jump on someone or you're always calculating. Even if you're moving, you know, maybe 3 inches on your screen, you're still going to calculate, well, when am I going to jump so as to avoid the fire trap, you know, or when am I going to jump in order to avoid the bullet trap?
Mm-hmm.
And with the worlds and even using the warp tubes in Mario Brothers,
it's still active.
It's still active and there's not that much tactical choice. Mm-hmm. Skipping worlds, it almost tends to be just personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
Either if you're making a speed run, sure. But if you want to experience some of the more fun worlds, like in Super Mario Brothers 3, one of my favorite worlds was the where everything was gigantic. Oh yeah,
the enormous level.
You skip that world when you use both whistles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, at some point, whether or not to skip something is just kind of up to you based on your level of fun.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, it's, I think most people do conceive of the travel in the inaction sense, and I think that works well with the open world games. I just think it's not necessary to confine it just to the open world things. I mean, I think there is room for discussing how we traverse the virtual worlds in more linear games or in games where we don't really conceive of ourselves as going from place to place. I just think it's something that we haven't talked about, and it just goes back to my way of viewing games, because, like, in Mario, I still see it as moving, but that's because, like, you know, the left side of the equation is Mario, and the right side of the equation is the destination. And to get to that destination, there is traveling involved, just as there might be multiplication, division, subtraction involved in the left side of an equation. There could also be traveling and action simultaneously.
Right.
You know, like, you could have multiple functions to get to a destination. It's not necessarily exclusive.
So then you would define it as moving is inherently transportation.
Pretty much, like, movement. I guess it's not a very granular definition of traveling. I mean, I guess people have this definition of traveling as it's somewhat like, it's like quasi-spiritual or philosophical in a way. Like, for me, like, traveling is just locomotion.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I guess that's the difference, really. So, like, philosophical traveling, sure, you might need an open world type thing, but in order to talk about actual geography and geometry in a game, I think that could fall under the purview of how you get from point A to point B, which I would consider traveling.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well,
especially because you could look at a game like Pokemon Snap,
mm-hmm.
where all you do is travel, but it's not even your choice. You're not controlling, you're on a railroad.
And you're active while you're doing it, like all rail games. Like, you're traveling when you're doing, like, Time Crisis or something, but you're just not controlling it.
So then theoretically you could have, like, a buddy road trip video game where you're not even
you're in shotgun.
You're in shotgun, and you're just, like, solving puddles and asking questions about beer supply and stuff.
Yeah, hey, there's Del Taco over there.
So you would still call that traveling in your?
I think my point is, I think all games have traveling, in a literal sense, but when we're talking about the philosophical implications of traveling, is what you're talking about, like. What does the journey mean? And I think people consider the journey is actually traveling, whereas I always consider, like, I think movement is also part of that as well. Because, I think Pokemon Snap is traveling, even though you don't have control over it, nor do you have long stretches of downtime. You're always looking for something.
So then you're saying that the way I interpret it philosophically is when you're moving, the moving is meaningless. The traveling is meaningless unless it has an important aspect to play in the larger.
Exactly. I think the way you're structure. Approaching it is that, like, traveling is an element that is used to engage you in the world. And even though that engagement might come in the form of boredom, like, it's still fleshing out the world. It's a function rather than an element of the experience.
Yeah.
You know, it's meant to describe a world rather than just exist as an entity.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. I mean, and they're not mutually exclusive. You could have both.
Exactly.
However, it's important to find that in games like Far Cry 2, for example,
mm-hmm.
where I would say once you've defined the world, once you've shaped out the world, it's no longer necessary. I get the idea, and I don't want to be pressured to maintain that.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's just a game design philosophy choice, because they could have easily done a more generous warp system in Far Cry, but clearly that's not what the point was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think we've traveled in a huge circle back to the beginning of this conversation.
I guess what I'm trying to say is boredom is all right as long as it doesn't happen twice, you know?
That's an interesting way to put it.
I should only be bored once in the game with each thing. Each thing is allowed to bore me once, and that's it. In terms of everything.
Repetition is okay as long as it doesn't repeat.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, that's great. Okay, well, I think before we repeat ourselves too much, yeah. I think we should wrap it up. If you want to write in with your thoughts about how games do travel, or just on a philosophical basis, how things change over time when you're playing in a game, you can email us at experiencepoints@gmail.com.
And as usual, we love your comments, so if you want to leave your comments to this podcast or any of our posts that we update Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings, please do. We encourage it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Until next time, happy trails.
Yay. Happy trails. Don't you get eaten by a bear. There's a place you go to because I